like it worked.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'll have to check it out. The new Skype have a recorder. Yeah. I don't pay attention. I just download the new version, don't look and see what they did. So
yeah.
I'm not a very compliant patient, so I will try it next week, though.
Okay.
I'm not going to go searching around Skype for stuff right now.
sure. No, I didn't mean now.
No. I'm just kidding. I'm making a joke.
I don't.
I should be wearing a wire. which is a recent joke that didn't go over very well, I guess. But anyway, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the House of the Risen Sun with Bruce Rawls and Lynn Johnson. And we are reading from Gary Renard's latest book called The Lifetimes When Jesus and Buddha Knew Each Other, History of Mighty Companions. And we're getting along pretty well in the book, and so I'm pretty happy about that. And also, I was going to mention that this last week, I was on Facebook and someone posted something about the CE, whatever they call that new edition, the purple, of A Course in Miracles that the Circle of Atonement has published. And I mentioned to them that, and they started their post with the words, "The scribe is dead. Long live the scribe." And I was shocked, and because it was on the Disappearance of the Universe Facebook page, I was shocked that someone posted that there, and I was shocked that somebody didn't say anything about it. But then I looked and I saw there was only one admin, and it was Gary. And I was realizing, well, Gary might not even realize this is happening, because there were a couple other things from that particular thing posted on the Facebook page. So I contacted Gary. I said, "Do you know this is happening?" And he said, "Oh, no, I'll look into it." And then he came back and said, "Oh, my gosh, you know, what should I do?" And, you know, so sweet. I love Gary. And I said, "Well, make me an admin, and I will take care of this for you." And so then I had to show him how to make me an admin. He had no idea. And so he did. And then I was able to go in and fix the Disappearance of the Universe Facebook group. So if you want to join that particular group and be a part of it, you are already a member, Bruce, by the way.
I know. I'm not a frequent participant, but I'm glad I'm a member, because I have, mostly in years past, spent quite a bit of time on the DU Yahoo group, and there's a lot of great stuff there, and kudos to you and everyone else who contributes to that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, so now we have a group on Facebook, and along with the Yahoo group. And so,
Send me a link to that.
Yeah, you are actually a member of it.
Oh, so. Okay. Maybe I belong to a lot of Facebook groups.
Yeah, I was going to try to add you, but you were already there.
Okay. So. Well, how metaphysically profound is that?
It is, absolutely. I mean, the page has been there for some time. And, and I was a member of it, and that's how I got this notification that there was there were these posts. And like I said, I was quite shocked, you know, to go and see someone posting "the scribe is dead." Long live the scribe, and then
unless you generalize, of course, to all dream characters have long since passed, and we're just
exactly
reviewing an old movie, you know.
I think it's highly inappropriate.
Silver screen stuff here. Right?
Exactly. So anyway, I went in and I took care of a bunch of stuff. There was no posting guidelines for the room or whatever. And then there were over, you're going to crack up about this, there were over like 500 or 700 requests for membership that were just sitting out there because no one approved them. So
I understand how that works. When you maintain a lot of online material and you're juggling, keeping a lot of plates and the stick spinning in the air kind of thing. It's easy, you know, as you keep adding more and more to start to neglect some. So it's, I understand how that works.
And it's a great idea. It's a great page now because, I went and added all those people and then all these people were like, well, thank you for adding me. And now, you know, we're starting conversations about the disappearance of the universe. And, so yeah, so it's and it's on Facebook. So anyone is open to join. I keep an eye on it now, and people are joining every day. That's the other thing too, is that once that started, how I don't know. Just every day now, new people are coming in. So it was an amazing coincidence, I guess, if you want to put it that way. Because I would never have paid attention to any of that, or known that that was happening. And I mean, what a great resource for sharing. You know, I mean, it's a great place, Facebook, for sharing.
It is.
Yeah, as long as you don't get into arguments with people, and that's one thing about being an admin, you can definitely stop those things or. You know, direct people or guide people for a different way of looking at things. So this must be good for me. So
well, we're all invested in dream identification. Otherwise, we wouldn't need this remedial program, right?
Exactly, and that is absolutely the case. So, you know, every day it's like now it's so much easier for me. To see that this is a dream. When I first was thinking, you know, this is a dream, I was thinking, you know, I've had experiences where I've experienced the world as a dream before, and not when I was on any kind of drugs, just naturally from when I was a small child, I would have this idea, this thought that I was just dreaming and that this world was not real and not know the difference between the sleeping dream world and the waking dream world. You know, I have that kind of experience, but for me now, experiencing the world as a dream is just amazing because then you see when all these characters show up and these things happen and these circumstances and these coincidences and these synchronicities and all these things that just seem so improbable when you look at the idea of the probability of something happening. The things that have happened to me and the things probably that have happened to you and many other of us are outside of the realm of normal probability. Things happen because time shifts. Things happen because distances change. Things happen because people change their mind in the most profound way about things that you would never have imagined that could happen. And so every single time I'm looking at it as this is showing me pretty obviously that there is no linear progression this to that to this to that. There is no connection between the past and the now and the future. These are all just independent events that coincide in whatever random way they coincide, and that I'm taking as being a pattern of reality when really it is just randomly bumpering around. and you know, like what my mom used to always say, even a blind pig finds a nut now and again.
Yep.
We just have a probability of more nuts. We're still blind pigs, but there's just more nuts out there for us to find, I guess.
Well, metaphorically speaking, you know, the universe. In truth, is, you know, the real universe is one giant nut, and we're all it. We don't have to even go anywhere or eat anything. We're all it.
Exactly.
Using nut in a very, very affirming way. The nut being perfect innocence and oneness and a very peaceful identity beyond anything we can imagine, right?
Well, and yes, and what is the nut? The nut is the seed, and what is the seed? The seed holds the possibility of all
there,
things of
there
the tree.
There you go. Yeah, ideas leave their source, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So, oh, God, we're clever this morning.
The oak tree never left the acorn.
That's right.
Yep. All righty.
Cough there. Now all that laughing made me cough. That's interesting because that's what I watch. I sit outside on my deck and watch these squirrels that are just coming around, and they love, I have this honey locust tree, and I bought one honey locust tree, and within 5 years, I have like 5 or 6 honey locust trees that are just coming up out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, wow, this is amazing. How do these get from here to there? And then I'm watching these squirrels, and they're, you know, that the female honey locust makes this long, skinny pod that has these little seeds in it. And the squirrels are harvesting those. And so I'm sitting there watching them as they're, you know, shuffling through and tearing up the pods and getting the nuts and running off and burying them. And then I realize, oh, that's where all these trees came from.
Funny you should mention that my wife, Nancy, she is one of her many missions in life is to entertain our 2 cats. And part of the methodology for her furthering that entertainment is to feed the squirrels and the birds, because our cats are indoor cats because of all the wild critters around, and so, and among other things. So we have 2 indoor cats, but they get entertained by bird feeders and squirrel feeders on hanging from trees and with a little feeder on the deck, and then particularly the chipmunks come around on the deck, and some of the bird seed and critter feed has sunflower seeds in them. And, so this year, we've been here almost 2 years now, this year, there was all these sunflowers springing up, and it's like, you know, how is that happening? And then, the squirrels, you know, and the chipmunks, you know, take some of the seed and, you know, bury it, and of course, so now we have sunflowers, and we actually transplanted one of them. It's doing quite well on the other side of a little seasonal creek there. So anyway, again, the take-home lesson is that we're all the same acorn, and we never left our source. And in the dream world, you know, these things propagate in ways we can't imagine. You know,
exactly.
And that's why, of course, Miracles says, you know, we don't have any idea, you know, the profound effects of the choices we make in our mind, and the echoes and the reflections and repercussions and all those kind of things. We're clueless because we have such a limited world view. We think that, well, if I do something, you know, maybe a neighbor or two will be affected, you know. But, you know, it's really every decision, every moment of our lives in our mind impacts the entire universe. And modern physics bears us out on that, as well as ancient mysticism. And so, you know, it kind of behooves us to maybe just pay more attention to the thoughts that we entertain, and particularly the thought system. And that's really, you know, rather than having to get into an elaborate, Linnaean classification of all the different kinds of thoughts there are, you know, like you learn in biology class all the different species and phylums and all that, phyla and all that. It basically just boils down to real simple binary choices. Is it kindness or is it cruelty? Is it love or fear? You know, is it inclusion or exclusion? And that simple binary choice makes all the difference. And the peace that we experience as a result of that choice is cumulative, just as the seeds that propagate are cumulative and start, you know, reforesting or re-landscaping our environs by the results that they feed back to us. And so that's kind of a nice thing to realize that, you know, we can indeed change our world. Not the material world, but the world that is reflected back to us in the sense that we can see everything differently, and more feel the peace that every thing and everyone gives to us as a message by our choice of teachers. And that's where the role of freedom lies, isn't it?
Exactly. Absolutely. And what you're talking about is exactly what today's lesson is saying, which is phenomenal.
One of my favorites.
As many times as I've read these lessons, and, I read it last night before I posted it, but it made me think about the Manual for Teachers that says that one of the characteristics of God's teachers is gentleness. Mm-hmm. And what it says is that gentleness comes naturally when you lack fear. Gentleness comes naturally when you trust. Right. And this is what this lesson is saying. Creation's gentleness is all I see. It says, I have indeed misunderstood the world because I laid my sins on it and saw them looking back at me.
How peekaboo.
Exactly. And how deceived was I to think, and you know, when I was posting this and reading this, I was actually had the news on listening to Rachel Maddow and all of this shenanigans that are going on in Congress and the White House and mm-hmm. with the Deputy Attorney General and all this kind of stuff. All right. So I was listening to that as I was posting and reading this lesson, and I was recognizing how easy it is to look at all of those characters, which Jesus says, I misunderstood the world because I laid my sins on it and saw them looking back at me. And I looked at, they were showing, particular people on TV, and I looked at that and I thought, there are all my sins looking right back at me. There are all my judgment looking like right back at me. How fierce they look. How deceived I was that what I feared was in the world instead of my mind alone. But it was my mind that made up that story of their wickedness. And, you know, even if you just went to look for motivation, why would they be so wicked? Why are they trying to hurt people? And you talk to any one of them, and they're going to tell you, we're trying to protect people. We're trying to help the world. We're trying, you know, they have an idea that what they're doing is a goodness. And, if I have an idea that what they're doing is a badness, then which one of us is really right?
as long as you phrase it in the which one, you know you're dealing out of a binary dualistic thought system, right? Again, and now on the level of form, we have to use that thought system just to get around in the world. The Course is not advising us to do that. It's merely saying to look at the contents of our mind from the perspective of our identity. It's really an identity course. It's really has nothing to do with behavior, but it has to do with essence and spirit and identity and, you know, how much we have, you know, erroneously, as like you mentioned, today's workbook lesson starts out with, you know, we misunderstand the world because we've placed our identity in something that we made up for the purpose of misunderstanding, for the purpose of being deceived and pulling the wool over our own eyes. But we can use that every single part of this world as a mechanism for getting back to the mind, and that's where the beauty lies, is seeing that everyone and everything then becomes a messenger for and returning to us the confirmation that yes, if I choose to see the gentleness and the innocence and the kindness that is behind all things and all creatures, extrapolating to everything, then that's what we're going to see. And we'll see everything either as an expression of love or a call for love. And we can see the love behind the call. And I think that's where the gentleness comes in, is we have tremendous compassion for ourselves and each other, you know, our little s selves, because, you know, we see that, you know, we've been in the same dream drama, this soap opera of the mind that we call 3D reality, and modern physics as well suggests that it's just a distortion. You know, Einstein said, you know, an optical delusion of consciousness is really, you know, what this world is. mean, that's pretty bold stuff coming from a physicist, you know. But you know, it's really true. We have made such a distortion that we don't even realize how tied up in knots and how many blankets and lead boxes and stuff we've used in our own minds only to darken our awareness and distort our understanding. And it's a, you know, it's a pretty dim, dismal experience unless we start, you know, retracing our steps with forgiveness and then backing out of that insane thought system slowly but surely until more and more light seeps through the cracks, and or we get closer to the mouth of the cave, retracing the dark thread and using it as a golden thread on the way, you know, by just turning it around. And you know, it works. It just takes a lot of patience and a lot of practice. And then the gentleness is really a huge part of that. It's a good, you know, checklist reminder. It's like, am I being any way mean-spirited or not even-handed in my assessment of anyone? If I'm not recognizing the deep angst and pain and suffering that is behind anyone's mind who has chosen ego as a thought system, which would have to include all of us, otherwise we wouldn't be here, then, you know, the only thing that's warranted is tremendous patience and compassion. And it doesn't mean on the level of form we don't do things behaviorally to, you know, like pulling kids out of traffic that aren't watching where they're going and you know, that kind of thing. But and maybe giving them a scolding, but in a loving way, you know. But it doesn't mean that their identity, their true identity, is any different. It just means that, you know, we have done something on the level of form that is an appropriate behavioral response, right?
Absolutely, and that's it. making the difference between the world I see and reality is really important. Let me turn this alarm off. Really important because if I look at the world I see and I see it as being having no purpose, which is really what the world we see, it has no purpose. The world of the ego has no purpose. But as you mentioned, the Holy Spirit is able to take the actor, the body that is the leading actor, lead role in the illusion, in the story, and use that same character to communicate God's love.
Exactly. It basically, A Course in Miracles is really a study and practice in taking, as it would call, you know, each of us, the hero of the dream and repurposing it for the purpose of finding and sharing the innocence that's behind the form and looking past or, you know, looking beyond or through the facade of space and time and bodies and personas. And seeing the spirit that's there and recognizing that that's really where our real happiness or salvation or whatever you want to call it comes from. That's our get out of jail, get out of hell free card that has been handed to us and has been mostly dormant. And we're encouraged to use it. So.
Well, and what happens, and I know it happened with me to some extent, but not to any great extent because I understood the purpose and I understood what was happening. What happens is that because we don't get the feedback or the reaction that we expect, and people say, you know, I did this, I did the lessons, and I still didn't find peace. I did every day for a whole year and I didn't become enlightened or whatever people think are going to happen. Or, you know, I tried to be this and I tried to do that and nothing happened. Because you have an investment in an outcome that you made up. You invented the outcome. So, for instance, if I think that I'm going to suddenly become enlightened and know everything and be, you know, in complete contact and connection with God by doing these lessons every day, that doesn't happen after a year. I'm going to be disappointed. I've known people who became like completely like, I'm, this course is worthless, and gave it up. And, but then you have to ask the question, which, you know, Jesus says you really don't have to really understand it or you just have to do it. But when you ask people, well, for instance, today's lesson, what did you do when you read that lesson? How did you go about your day after you read a lesson that says, I don't understand the world, I put my own sins on it, I saw them looking back at me, and I was afraid. I was deceived in thinking that my own thoughts were reality. But today, I'm going to see that my thoughts are just clouds in the sky, and that in no way do they reflect reality. In no way do they have any effect on me. No way can they make me afraid. And now I'm going to go through my day with that mm-hmm. in my mind. This mm-hmm. is how I'm going to look on TV, and I'm going to say, you are innocent, whole and healed. There's nothing wrong with you. Everything is perfect here. I see a gentle world. If you could do the lesson like that, and every time it came to your mind to condemn, instead you forgave and looked for the peace of God, looked for the Son of God in whatever, whoever made that statement or did that thing or whatever, then hell yeah, you know, one day, if you could do this for one day, I guarantee you tomorrow would be a different world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, we you know, like you say, read the workbook lesson. It's really, in a sense, no different than the kind of cliche of going to church on Sunday and then, you know, forgetting everything that might have been inspiring the rest of the week kind of thing. And it's again a matter of motivation. And I think that's why there's so much language in A Course in Miracles that shows the stark contrast between the two thought systems. And there's no minced words in that whole curriculum of, 1,300 pages, whatever it is, because it really has as this intention to, you know, when we're ready, to wake us up. And it's really a reflection, obviously the words in the book, or in whatever digital form you might be reading it, are there, as a reflection of the mind's decision to want to choose again, to want to choose peace instead of ego's insane curriculum. And once we make that choice and begin to make it consistently, we realize how ambivalent we really have been and how much, you know, kind of token lip service we've given to the Course. Even if we've studied it for several decades, you know, in my case, I realized, you know, how much resistance there is. But that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, how many lifetimes have we spent doing that? The idea is, what am I doing now? What am I, not even so much doing, it's what am I choosing in my mind? Because doing tends to imply behavior, but it's not, doesn't mean we behave any differently. It doesn't mean we, you know, change where we live or you know, go, you know, adopt a monastic lifestyle or give away our worldly possessions or do any of the outer trappings that, you know, characterize a superficial understanding. It's basically saying, you know, don't be crazy. Don't be, you know, be normal. But just don't, you know, allow the thoughts that condemn to go unchecked without checking in with our inner kindness teacher, aka Holy Spirit or Jesus of the Course, and just say, hey, what do you think here? You know, is this condemning thought going to help me? And, you know, obviously that rhetorical question has its own answer. It's like, the response we'll always get from that infinitely gentle, infinitely patient teacher is always going to be, you know, that has never worked for you. It never will work for you. The stark insanity of that insane dream is becoming more and more obvious the more you look at it. And as we look at it together, which is why the Course is so focused on relationships, then, you know, over time, the cumulative effect of looking with the Holy Spirit at all the things that are totally mezzo and ego's misunderstanding and misinterpretation of things becomes apparent. And we realize, you know, there's really no point in you know, belaboring this dead horse, and we start to move on. We start to say, hey, I can see peace instead of this. I can choose a different interpretation, and really the translation is you know, where we go beyond the superficial and see the beauty, you know, see the gentleness of creation in everything we see, because we've chosen a different teacher, and that teacher shows us that the world that we made by default is you know, a fearful, you know, the home of evil, darkness, and sin, as the Course puts it, you know, very bluntly, again, not mincing any words, but given over to that inner kindness teacher, we see beyond that you know, nightmare movie facade, and see that that's just a silly disguise that we gave to it in order to keep ourselves afraid and asleep and mindless, and we don't have to do that anymore. So
isn't that nice?
yeah. Should we start reading in the remaining not quite half hour?
Yeah, why don't you start?
Okay. I have us on, I think we got to page 168.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm going to start at the top of that page. And again, we're reading from Gary Renard's fourth book, The Lifetimes When Jesus and Buddha Knew Each Other, A History of Mighty Companions. So on the top of page 168 in the printed version, Persa says, "Just joking." And this is after a mock insult to Gary. "Remember, not making it real is the smoothest shortcut to practicing true forgiveness. In fact, it's the most important part. You can't forgive what you're making real. If you do that, it won't work. That's what the Course calls forgiveness to destroy." Martin. "Also, to save time, keep putting the Holy Spirit in charge of your day." That's, you know, hugely important. "It helps you remember to look to Spirit for guidance when you can, when you have time to. You think of Jay often, and that's good. You're connected. Of course, people can just talk to the Holy Spirit if they prefer. The point is in the asking, you know, or metaphorically questioning the knee-jerk ego response that leaves us feeling not good." So Gary continues, "Yeah, if I can, I take 5 minutes in the morning and just connect with Spirit. I don't have to say anything. I just forget about the world, forget about the things I think I need," which is my favorite line from the Song of Prayer. "Secret of true prayer is to forget the things I think I need. And just go to God. I get lost in God's love. I'm in a condition of gratitude. It helps my mind stay more in a condition of spirit and be more open to inspiration. All it takes is the thought. I think it's vital to get used to being with God. Most people don't include God in their meditations, but you'll notice that some of the later workbook lessons of the Course involve an actual approach to God. At one point, Jay even has you call out to God. As you've taught me, you can't undo the idea of separation from God without acknowledging God. At some point, you've got to get together with him." And again, him being an anthropomorphic linguistic convention that has nothing to do with masculinity polarized with femininity or individuality even. You know, it's obviously the capital H here is referring to that all-encompassing awareness that we all are, that is beyond expression and form. Okay, Arden says, "Not bad, brother. Incidentally, we're glad to see Cindy is becoming an excellent teacher in her own right. Of course, anybody who's scheduled to be me in her next lifetime was bound to be good." That's Arden is Cindy's future self, for anybody who hasn't read Gary's books. Gary, "Oh, yes, and she's got a mind of her own. I don't tell her what to do. If she wants to travel and do a workshop with me, she does. If she doesn't want to schedule herself to go somewhere, she doesn't. But she just started speaking a few years ago, and I'd put her right up there with the best of them. She doesn't compromise on the Course, and I've never seen anyone read it as much as she does. She's always talking about it. Sometimes I get tired of thinking about the Course, and I have to say, 'Cindy, give me a break, will you?' Plus, she's got her music career going and just finished her third solo CD. Of course, fewer people are buying CDs nowadays. It's all going digital. But I get to hear her at the house on the piano writing her songs. It's fun." Do you want to pick up from there?
Sure. And actually, we already read this, but
I'm realizing that, too. I think we got this page, but yeah. Anyway. Good review and kind of sew together the context from the previous.
Obviously, there's a purpose. Yeah. So Artin says, you'll see fewer people buying books in the future, too. Yet some people will always want to feel that book in their hands and read it in the old-fashioned way. But the millennials read things on their devices. I read things on my device because I'm blind, so it really helps. But most of them don't read books. For better or for worse, that's the wave of the future. Gary, hey, I guess I'm lucky I got to work with you guys when people still read books. Of course, people will always be able to read us on their devices, but it doesn't seem the same to me. Ursa, at least they're reading. That's something. You know, Helen never would have imagined people reading the course on a device right out of Star Trek. Gary, well, we know she's up to date on things now. And I don't know if you want me, I'll go ahead and read this note. For sure. Several years, I've known that Helen Schuckman, the scribe of A Course in Miracles, had reincarnated. I also knew the person whom she came back as, and I had become very close friends with that person. The person knows about being Helen, knows all about that lifetime. It goes without saying that I would never, quote, unquote, out this person. I would never say who the person was. Only the person who was Helen should do that, if that person chooses to. And if the person doesn't ever choose to, I would totally support that decision. When hearing Artin and Persa tell the story of their final lifetime as presented in my third book, I thought it was interesting that the two ascended masters never taught the course in public during their final lifetimes. Nadav, who before had been Buddha, didn't really teach in his final lifetime either. The course says, quote unquote, to teach is to demonstrate. It's clear that sometimes just living the course is the best way to teach it. Artin, any more questions? Gary, I don't know. Some questions just can't be answered. Artin, for instance? Gary, well, for example, why is Times Square a triangle? Only Gary would ask that question, right? Artin, actually, that question can be answered. For many centuries, what's now Broadway used to be an Indian trail going across through Manhattan. The trail went across the island diagonally. Eventually, it became a road, then later a street called Broadway. The other streets were built mostly parallel on the island, so they were built straight, but Broadway was still crooked, and when it meets Times Square, it makes it look like a triangle. Gary. Oh. Profound. Oh, and Persa. just a little architectural history of this of the city of New York for you. Thank you.
There you go. Exactly.
Persa, the Holy Spirit plays an active role in influencing people to go to certain places, meet particular people, and learn the things that will help them the most along the path. It's like the Holy Spirit is gently nudging you in the right direction. Maybe you'll have a simple thought that you should read a certain book or go see a particular movie or hear someone speak or be friends with someone, and you think it was your idea, but it was really the Holy Spirit guiding you from the right part of your mind, putting thoughts in your consciousness that help speed you along. Do you remember back in 78 when your life was a disaster and Dan kept trying to get you to do the S training, and EST is
Seminars training, I think it is.
Seminars training, yeah. Which was really big back in the 70s, and a lot of Course in Miracles students went through it. So it was really all about finding out your reality of who you are. So do you remember when Dan kept trying to get you to do the EST training, and you finally broke down and went with him and his girlfriend Charlene to a guest seminar? Gary, I sure do. The people there were so different. They seemed so powerful and so in charge of their lives. It was exciting, even though I didn't understand what the hell they were talking about. There were cultish aspects to it, but it wasn't like they were trying to get you to go live with them in the jungle and drink Kool-Aid. let's see. I'm going to let you read from here.
Okay.
This
sure.
Interesting story.
Sure. Persa, do you remember that you had no intention of signing up that night, but you started to get an overwhelming feeling that you should? That was the Holy Spirit guiding you, gently persuading you. Then you still had no intention of registering because you had no money and it cost $300, which was more like $1,000 today. You could register with a $30 deposit, but you didn't have anything, not even a dime, broke and destitute. Gary, yeah, it was awesome. His typical sense of humor. Person. Then the Holy Spirit gave a thought to Charlene. Lend him $30 so he can register. She and Dan were both surprised because she couldn't afford it either. That was all the money she had. But you signed up and paid her back, even though it took you 8 months to get a job and do it. But it seemed hopeless in the 2 months after you registered to come up with the other $270 to do the training. 1 week before, even though you knew your mom couldn't afford it, you asked her for the money. If she had extra money, she would have given it to you gladly, but she thought she couldn't because it was almost all the extra money she had. Still, after trying so hard to talk her into it, she relented. The Holy Spirit helped her sense that you might have found something to help you turn your life around. She gave you the money and you did the training, which was exactly what you needed at the time, and you began your journey in the right direction. None of those things happened by accident. The Holy Spirit, who I'll sometimes refer to as HS, was there every step of the way, leading you and guiding others to help you, knowing that was best. You didn't even think of the Holy Spirit back then, but it didn't matter. Holy Spirit is always there with everyone, helping people all the time. The question is, are they willing to listen? Kind of ties into our earlier conversation this morning, isn't it? The amount of time we actually listen. For most people, the answer is no. Not yet. But Holy Spirit is always doing its job, and for some people the answer is yes. You were smart enough to listen, even though it didn't seem practical at the time. Arten, every day all over the world and all over the universe and every seemingly split-off mind of the Sonship, the Holy Spirit is giving right-minded ideas to everyone. Sometimes they listen, sometimes they don't. For core students, those right-minded ideas are more advanced than they are for most people, because they're ready. If they weren't ready, they wouldn't be doing the course in the first place. What look like coincidences are not coincidences. The Holy Spirit is always guiding and influencing people to be at certain places and meet certain people so they can be truly helped. Look at the story of how your next-door neighbor found our first book. Gary. Right. I'll tell the story. There's this woman named Janine Rebman who's been on a spiritual path for 25 years. She and her good friend Stephanie Swangle started their journey as students of Edgar Cayce. That's how they met and became close friends, studying at Atlantic University, the educational organization of the ARE, the Association for Research and Enlightenment, which is the Edgar Cayce Group in Virginia Beach, Virginia. At one point, years into their spiritual quest, they found A Course in Miracles. But even though they were attracted to it, they just couldn't figure out what it was communicating. It's like French, they'd say later. Frustrated, they eventually gave up on the course. Then a few years ago, Janine's sister, Lynn, who was also on a spiritual path, was living with her for a while. She had written a book and was looking at possible ways to get it published. She went out for a walk and met a guy at a stoplight. For no apparent reason, Lynn struck up a conversation and started telling him that she was trying to get a book published. The man, now interested, said, "Oh, I'm an author." He told her what he had written and gave her some advice, and they went their separate ways. When Lynn got back, she told Janine she'd met this nice guy who was an author and they had talked at the stoplight. When Lynn mentioned the author's name, Janine thought it sounded very familiar but couldn't quite place it. She felt impelled to go out to her mailbox at the apartment complex she lived in. When she looked at the neighboring box, she saw the name of the author Lynn had just met. He lived in the next apartment. That author was me. I was her next-door neighbor, but I traveled a lot, and we had never spoken. Janine could tell this wasn't your typical everyday experience. She looked me up online and found The Disappearance of the Universe. She read it in 2 days and told Stephanie, her longtime fellow spiritual traveler, this is going to change your life. The two of them, like many who had given up on ACIM, read DU, as it's often called, and then when they went back to read the course, it started making sense to them. I'm solidly in that camp, as a quick aside. I did know that it had a lot in it for me, but I had read it back in the mid-80s and having finally picked it up after knowing about it for a decade or so, and having sat on my mom's bookshelf along with a lot of other metaphysical books. And anyway, the three volumes at that time. I'm definitely in the Renard DU can opener school. Yeah, there was a total renaissance for me in 2007 when I picked up DU finally and read it. Okay, end of aside. She read it in two days and told her longtime fellow spiritual traveler, this is going to change your life. The two of them, like many who had given up on ACIM, Red U, as it's often called, and then when they went back to read the course, it started making sense to them. They then became enthusiastic students of the course and my books, and ACIM is now their chosen spiritual path. I know from observation that they not only study it, but also live it. Janine and Stephanie told the story on the video podcast series hosted by my sister-in-law, Jackie Laura Jones, called The 24th Hour. Today, Janine, Stephanie, Cindy, and I, Jackie, and Mark, my brother-in-law and producer of the video podcast, are all very close. Janine and Stephanie have a podcast called The Course, of course, where new people and experienced students are always learning about ACIM. The whole series of events is an example of the Holy Spirit at work, and this kind of thing is happening all the time. Do you want to go on from there?
Well, yeah, this is pretty amazing. I love it, and it just sparked me to realize as well, since I have that now, that Facebook group of the Disappearance of the Universe, we could post some of these podcasts on there. I posted one today from Mikey. He interviewed Cindy's sister, Jackie. Uh-huh. So he posted on Facebook, so I shared it onto the DU Facebook page. But any of these interviews, and I know you do a lot of them.
Once a month with Jackie. We were doing twice a month, but I think that gives her more flexibility to pull in other wonderful course teachers and students. So one of the latest ones was Mikey. She also did one with Alexander Marchand, who wrote the wonderful comic book, The Universe is a Dream, about the Course in Miracles. And a lot of other authors. What's that?
Mikey's been down there visiting him.
Oh, yeah.
Very cool. So we can post those on that Facebook page, and then you can just post the links on there. And if you want me to, I'll do that.
I'm great.
I'll post the links to this on there too, so people can
get
with us.
Absolutely.
Okay. So yay. All right. So Artin says, "Thank you, Gary. And why do you suppose Lynn went out for a walk that day at exactly the time she did and met you and started talking to you at the stoplight at just the right moment? Was it coincidence?" Gary, you're saying the Holy Spirit nudged her in the right direction at exactly the right time? Artin, you know it. So, and also the Holy Spirit urged you, Gary. So when we say the Holy Spirit plays an active role, we're not kidding. Keep in mind, however, that the Holy Spirit does not make things happen in the world. That would be making the world real. HS does not manipulate the level of form, but HS does guide you through your mind. Everything the Holy Spirit does and everything the Course teaches is always at the level of the mind. Anyone who remembers that will save themselves a lot of time, which, as you can see by now, is a major goal of the Course. In fact, you won't find the time-saving feature of the Course anyplace else. Forgiveness done from a place of cause and effect, of cause and not effect, really is a miracle. And I just want to say an aside to this, that what happens is not that you actually change the course. There's no changing of the course, the course of your day. There's no changing of your history, because all of this was written long ago at the time of the Tiny Mad Idea. So we're not changing our history by following these clues and these coincidences. We are actually skipping through the process.
Yeah. You know, I like how go ahead.
Go ahead, say what you're gonna say.
Oh, I was just gonna say, my enthusiasm for this is evident. I've actually put in my second book, the Geometry Code, a modified illustration from one of Alexander Marchand's illustrations in one of his books, that shows the quantum hyper jumping. And I think this kind of makes sense to me. I have no idea if this is how it really works, but it seems like an interesting metaphor that you know, when the Holy Spirit basically inspires us to do something that, you know, essentially in mind changes our you know, is basically That's I think that's the real celestial speed up. It has nothing to do with the world of time or space, really. It's just basically saying to ourselves, I'm ready to go home, and I want, because of our nervous resistance, we think of it in the context of time, but it's basically just saying, I want to do this more quickly, and the quantum forgiveness that is the, you know, the tying into, you know, the fact that in our quantum physics reality, quote unquote, there's really nothing to space or time. Those are just, you know, interpretations, or more accurately, misinterpretations. So it's what enables the things that seem, you know, unimaginable, and kind of the Star Trek level, you know, technology of the mind to make these hyper jumps. And so if you kind of imagine, our life going around in sort of a circular, or maybe even a helical spiral kind of a fashion, just as the planets in our solar system in the context of the galaxy are on a helices within helices, you know, trajectory. You know, if you imagine a corkscrew, a spiral, that kind of spiral shape, which is called a helix, that's really the path. And so I think, you know, our progression through what we think of as our lifetimes, seems to take the, you know, these sort of spiral kinds of things, but as we kind of go around and around, but at any moment we can sort of make it like a hyper jump to a similar place, kind of like if you jump from right now, which is the fall equinox, to another point in the calendar a year from now, you'll have a similar kind of you know, the autumnal aspects of perhaps the weather, and certainly the position of the sun relative to the earth, and all those kind of things. But on a more metaphysical level, if all the archetypes of the things that we're forgiving are lined up in a way that we make a choice to forgive, it's almost like the whole hierarchy and the whole fractal network of things that are out there to forgive, that are things that we made up, we handle, in essence, you know, an archetype at a time. And so that allows us to make like a quantum hyper jump into a similar arena in terms of the qualitative aspects of it. But we just now do that from the point of having forgiven ourselves for more of the dream that we made up. And so we kind of get back more quickly, if that makes sense. Anyway.
And what it really is that the scenario is already there. That imaginary scenario is already existing. Yep. As it's the real world, which Jesus talks to us about, it actually exists right now in the illusion. And all we have to do is find our way into it. And I love the way you're talking about the spiral, because that's exactly what it is. If you are following the spiral linearly, you are going in a horizontal path. You're also going kind of vertical, because you're spiraling upward or spiraling whatever.
That's a slow vertical.
It's very, very, very slow. But if you keep going, eventually you will whatever make it. But we're talking now about, instead of just going horizontally through the spiral, now we're going vertically. So we're going up into level upon level upon level of different world scenarios, still imaginary worlds, but different world scenarios. So my act of kindness and gentleness today, the things that I do, are actually moving me upward into a world where kindness and gentleness is more prevalent. And the more I do that, and the more you do that, and, you know, however you want to think about it, the more you rise vertically, or as I see it, move more inwardly, actually, to be in the real world. Mm-hmm. And so this is the gift that comes from doing the lessons. This is the gift that comes from practicing forgiveness, is that I am leveling up in a vertical way that is bringing me into more and more and more of a peaceful world. The world of peace is more evident, and I no longer see the upset and the fear. So it really is it's a lovely thing. And do you want to, let's see, were you reading or was I reading last? Oh, I was reading, I think. So, so let's see, so...
I think we're on Speaking of the Level of Mind, right?
Speaking of, okay, first of Speaking of the Level of Mind, the human race will continue to develop its mental abilities over the centuries. It will continue to go horizontally along this this spiral over the centuries. And Gary says, wait a minute, over the centuries? Are you saying the human race and the planet are going to survive for centuries? That's the most encouraging thing I've heard in a while. And Persis says, don't get all giddy about it. It won't be easy. Yay! We're going to live. No, it won't be easy. There will be times when the human race will survive by the skin of its teeth. There's global warming, which will mess up the Earth's weather and topography, displacing many millions and killing many millions more, which we are seeing right now with all of the warmer oceans putting up more water up into the air. And, you know, places in this country are flooding as far, I think, as Illinois now from the hurricane that hit the East Coast. That's amazing. But this is because of these things. And so Persa continues, there are covert attempts to limit the world's population by making men sterile without them realizing it. Oh, that's a good idea. There's the prospect, not just of nuclear terrorism, but also regional nuclear war, which could happen in several different areas. You have politicians in positions of power, and some who will be, who, for lack of a better term, are nut jobs. When was this written? Whoa!
But we got to remember the nut. As we started the conversation this morning, we need to remember the nut, right? The metaphysical nut with a capital N, which is what our true acorn or whatever. Yeah, anyway.
Yes, that is the Holy Son of God. Okay, that's not a judgment, just a logical extension of a thought system. Don't forget what the Course says about the ego. It is completely savage and completely insane. Humans are in for quite an adventure. The colonization of other planets will help ensure the survival of the race, make it more difficult for you to kill yourselves all at once. Gary, surely there must be some good stuff about the future.
And that seems like a good place to stop, because we're right at 8:30.
Of our time. I think that's great.
And what a great cliffhanger, because now we get to have the optimistic stuff for next week.
Oh my gosh, let me mark this page. We optimistically return a week from today at the same station, same...
Stay same tuned time. For the continuing saga.
Oh, hilarious. All right, I love you, Bruce. Thank you so much for joining us.
Likewise, Lynn, yes.
And we will see you next week. And right now I'm going to...
Happy equinox, everyone. So.
Yes, happy equinox, yes.
In a few hours. Yeah.
Yep.
Have a great week, all.
All right, thank you, Bruce. And I'm going to turn the mic over to you, Iris, and Carrie.